everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true, people. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet. We've got articles on writing, you know, the crafted business of writing, if you're into that, but also articles on the writing life. It's what it is to wake up and say, I want to write something that didn't exist yesterday. That takes a certain kind of psychology, and we write about that too. I do it two or three times a week in the editor's blog. Yes, I do. So you got that, but we also have video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors of all genres. My conversation with Michael Elias is up there now. Fascinating guy. Worked in film, worked in television, worked on the stage. He was a comic. Now he's a novelist, a suspense novelist. What an interesting man and a friend of today's guest, as a matter of fact. Yes, he is. Check it out. That's all on authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association. People who have been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. We're going to do our conference virtually this year, I believe. It looks like. I think that's been settled. So it'll be wherever you are. Doesn't matter. You're in Timbuktu, you can come to the conference. You're in Seattle, you can come to the conference too. Doesn't matter. That's right. You'll be able to benefit from it. It's going to be worldwide. It's going to be global. I believe I'll be participating since it's going to be global. I hope I see you in whatever form that is there. Check it out at pnwa.org. So a couple weeks ago, I said I had some news. Well, I do have some news. Another book. That's right. We just finalized the details with the publisher Penguin Random House today. It'll be out, I hope, next April, early May. Sort of in the same family of fearless writing. This one, I believe, unless things change, sometimes they do. But as of now, the title will be Everyone Has What It Takes. Yes, they do. We're going after self-doubt. Deep self-doubt. So that's just something to think about. Just something to think about. Everyone has what it takes. You've maybe heard me talk about it some. If you've read my stuff, maybe had me write about it. But nope. It's a book coming out late April, early May next year, 2021. But I will not speak of it again, I don't think, until it is available for pre-order. But I just thought I'd let you know. Just something to think about. Something to look forward to, right? Yeah, of course. All right, enough about me. Let's talk about today's guest, Amy Liu. Amy's the author of numerous best-selling novels, as well as nonfiction books on medical and psychological topics. Her work has appeared in the Los Angeles Times, Los Angeles Review of Books, Ms., and many other publications. She is on the faculty of Goddard College's MFA Creative Writing Program, right here in Port Townsend, Washington. Well, I'm in Seattle, but Port Townsend, Washington, not far from here. Amy earned her MFA from Bennington Writing Seminars. She also graduated from Yale University. Yeah, she's been around. She worked as a flight attendant, edited business and trade publications, and was an associate producer for NBC's Today Show before turning to writing full-time. Her latest novel is Glorious Boy, and she's here with us today. Amy, how you doing?
Hi. I'm fine, Bill. Thank you, and congratulations on your new publication. That's right up there with launch days, the most exciting day is the day you make your deal on the book.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot of fun. I'm in good spirits. I was a little down last week. Things were looking kind of apocalyptic in the country, but maybe a little less so now. And so, well, anyway, here we are. Amy, you're down there in L.A. We were just talking to you down there in Venice. Are you starting to get a little stir crazy?
Well, not really, because I'm a writer.
Yeah, so I know.
I'm basically at home all the time anyway, so, you know, that hasn't made that much of a difference, although I do like to go to the beach, and I haven't dared to go to the beach, and I also, given my druthers, I think I would be out marching, but I don't dare to go out and march. So, you know, there's that, but.
Right, so there you are at home. Yeah. This is novel number 4 or 5? 4?
Four. But I write so many other books that it's about, you know, I'm into my 20s on other books. I ghostwrite, so I write lots and lots of other books.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. Well, all right, before we get to that, I mentioned in my intro, you graduated from Yale. Now, was it in studio art? Was it in?
I was a painter, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. So this was okay. So that was your first sort of inkling about the arts. Was you thought painter, visual artist, and what happened with that? Did you say this is for the birds, or what happened?
Well, you know, it was great in college, and then I got out of college and I got a loft in New York City, and my community had all dispersed, and suddenly, you know, it wasn't so much about the paintings. And and I had been a writer before I went to college, and I kind of got distracted and intrigued by the whole world of art and painters and paintings. And I needed that community, and I didn't have it, but the writing was there for me. So I went back to writing, and the irony is now I've found my way back to art through Instagram. So Well, I love it. I mean, I do, you know, not necessarily every day, but pretty much every day. I make a painting on Instagram out of a photograph, and I'm just really, really loving getting that back. So
That's great.
I feel like a more integrated person now. So, well, but it's a long time getting there.
Yeah, well, this is what happens as we get a little older. We pull all the parts. You know, I feel like we do. It's true for me anyway. As I get older. And I am getting older. But as I get older, I recognize all the parts of myself that maybe I rejected a little bit, and I now see their value, and I see how they're a part of the whole. The things that I wanted to ignore or I kind of kept hidden, I see their value, and I kind of allow them to be a part of my full life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that's part of what we call wisdom as we get older. Yeah, we're all getting older, but some at different rates than others.
Yes, I enjoy it. I wouldn't go back a day. I wouldn't want to give up.
And I think that's part of what writing does. You know, it writing really helps you by telling your story or telling stories that we're always in our stories, even if we're writing fiction, we're writing about ourselves. So, you know, but that's all part of that integration process.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was just what do you think about it? Because you wrote some books about anorexia, and you wrote a memoir based, I think it looks like, on your own experiences with eating disorders. And,
right, it was the first first memoir of anorexia way back in 1979.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nobody knew anything about it back then. It was just.
Did it even have a name?
It had a name that was only clinically used, and it's a long story, but, you know, I read an article in Vogue magazine that named it, and I thought, oh, my God, that was 7 years of my life, and nobody else had named it. It was never diagnosed or anything, but so that was,
you know,
that was that.
Well, what do you think of this? I published a piece, and I write an essay every month or every week for the Good Men Project, which is this website, which I just write about whatever I want, really. But this one I wrote about this thing that happened with my grandpa and me when I was 11. It was kind of a Me Too type thing. And so I published it, and I heard from a friend today who said, oh, Bill, I didn't know about that thing with you. I'm really sorry about that. And what struck me was, see if this makes sense to you, someone who's written about her own life. I just told my wife, which is that if I can write about it, there's nothing to be sorry about anymore. That once I've been able to write about it, once I have written about it, I have integrated and made sense of it. And for me, the pain is over. The shame is over. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, writing your story is a huge part of any kind of psychotherapeutic process. And, you know, it's partly getting the story out from deep inside you so you can take a look at it and externalize it and objectify it so that you're not the object, the experience is the object. But I also think it's part of, you know, we do make sense of things as we're putting the words on the page. It forces us to kind of contextualize and and you know, put them in a different perspective, and that's hugely important. Yeah. You know?
Do you feel like you don't really know what you know until you write it?
I definitely don't. Not only that, but I always tell my students, you know, the one of the worst things that can be said to a writer is write what you know. I mean, so many of my students have been so crippled by that advice.
That kind of notion
that you have to be the authority on what you're writing about before you start writing. As if there's some sort of a gate, you know, some sort of a ticket you have to get before you're allowed to, you know, start putting words on the page. And my attitude about it is, you know, write what you don't know, but you need to find out. I mean, you know, that's...
I like that. You know what I always say? When you say write what you know, you can interpret that all different ways. I think for me, what I've always thought is, one thing I know is what I'm interested in. Like, I know I'm interested. Like, that I know. Because maybe you're interested in elves and dwarves, or maybe you're interested in romance, or maybe you're interested in why did that happen? That I know, but then the rest, because don't you get bored if you already know it? I mean,
absolutely.
What's the fun otherwise?
I mean, that's the problem with outlining a book to death, you know, where you know everything that's going to happen, you know every beat of this story. I mean, I find great value in outlining books, but always with the understanding that I could be, you know, I can throw the outline away tomorrow, but, you know, it doesn't own me. It doesn't control the story. It's just a helpful tool to see what might happen next, but not dictate. Yeah.
Was the memoir your first book, or how did that was your first book?
That was my first book. Yeah.
And
I thought
working...
that it would lead right. I mean, that's another fallacy. I thought that having written a memoir, I could go right into writing a novel. And I did that without any training in what fiction.
Right.
I didn't take any craft classes.
Right.
I didn't know the first thing. And it was just a horror that my agent at the time made me promise to either burn or never show up. instead of going and getting my MFA right then, which maybe I should have, I don't know, but anyway, I wrote nonfiction for years before I got back, or before I actually had the courage to write my first novel. So
did you write? Now you say, were you ghostwriting and writing stuff of your own?
Ghostwriting your own.
So you were writing some of your own topic related books.
A lot of co-authoring at that time.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote three psychology books with a psychologist. And I did. I was a writer on a couple of books with Dr. Art Uhlein, who, you know, if your audience is old enough, they'll remember Dr. Art Uhlein from the Today Show. So I did a couple of his books, and, you know, over the years I've done everything from diet books to business books and everything in between. So.
Right. But hanging there in your psyche was the novel. So you set out, you right away dove in. It was just a disaster, but you weren't ready to give up on it. You weren't ready to ditch the novel.
Well, I ditched that novel.
That novel, but the novel.
I didn't
novel.
Ditch the goal of writing fiction. But I definitely, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that would be interesting to go back and see if there's anything salvageable between the lines. But what's in the lines is definitely not there. But, I've written a couple of books. I tend to write Asian American stories because the thing that you talked about being interested in, the thing that just I never get tired of is the story of my father's life, because my father was half Chinese and born in Shanghai. And always an enigma to me and my whole family. And the story of his, well, because he was the enigmatic Chinese, half Chinese person.
Right. Was he
man
remote?
Of few words.
Okay.
Very remote, and with a lot of interesting, you know, and frustrating quirks, and, you know, and a past that he never talked about. So the past was extremely alluring, and the story of his parents' marriage which was the story that I started telling in my first novel, Face, and then I told in really great detail in Cloud Mountain, my second novel, is, you know, it's a forever fascinating story of star-crossed lovers, and they met in 1906 in San Francisco at the time of the San Francisco earthquake, and my grandfather was a scholar revolutionary from China, and he was working with Sun Yat-sen, and then they went back and they lived through the warlord era in China, and their marriage spanned more than 20 years, and they had four children, and, you know, there was a lot going on in that relationship and that part of my father's family. And that was a big part of what he never talked about. So writing, that's why I say, you know, write what you need to find out. That was a book that I wrote because I needed to find out. And then my family lived in India for 2 years when I was really young, my first memories are of India. That's when I shifted over, refocused. A character similar to my father, sort of similar to my father, is in Flash House, my third novel as well. But it's set in India in the Cold War. Right. And I was still, you know, I was researching that book when I learned about the Andaman Islands, which is where Glorious Boy is set. So these books kind of, one led to another, even though they're quite different. The Glorious Boy is set during World War II, and Flash House is set during the Cold War, and Cloud Mountain is set way back at the, you know, early part of the 1900s. So they're very different historical eras, but they all keep circling around different aspects of Asia and also aspects of, you know, cultural collision and multiculturalism and all of that. That's kind of, you know, I'm a quarter Chinese, and that's kind of core to both my identity and my outlook, and I think exacerbated by the fact that my first memories are of India. So when we came, I was in kindergarten when we came back, and I didn't feel like an American. I didn't feel like I had anything in common with anybody in America.
Wow. So you can still remember that feeling?
You're that young.
It's so young to have those experiences.
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember refusing to pledge allegiance to the American flag because I felt like I belonged to India. What was I doing, you know, pledging allegiance to this flag? So Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. You know, I was going to say that it was so interesting to me that you write this memoir and you say, okay, I'm going to write a novel. And even though the novel didn't work out, you were right away drawn to the subject matter that would continue to, in other words, your instinct was directed and focused, and on the subject matter wise, you were already aimed at what you were going to be working on. You kind of knew that. You just didn't know how to write a novel, but it is interesting to me that you, because a lot of times what happens is people start off and they actually just come at the wrong thing. They like to have the wrong subject matter. They write about stuff they're not actually interested in. They write what they think they're supposed to be writing. There's a lot of ways we do writing incorrectly. But you started off pointed in the direction that was authentic to you, just didn't have the novel writing chops to pull it off. Because, you know, I will say, you can go from memoir to novel. It's not impossible because the two things are related in many ways, I think.
But you have to learn about story structure.
Yes,
you have to learn about plot. And I think only because it was the first memoir of anorexia and nobody had ever seen anything like it. So I got a pass on a lot of the stuff that I really didn't know about.
Okay.
And then when I tried to, you know, I tried to replicate what I'd done, I really, you know, at that point I didn't know what I was writing about either. I mean, I had some general tendencies, but nothing that really had the dramatic integrity to work as a novel. So
There was a lot to learn, but I'll bet you all that nonfiction writing, it's strange because it sounds like it was more very a little left brainy in that it's, you know, more topic and, you know, explaining things, right? And so that's fine, you know, but there had to be somehow that had to help you in some way I don't know how get you. Was it just going for your MFA and learning that helped, or was there all that nonfiction writing must have done something to shake you up a little bit and break down
something for you?
Well,
it gave me the discipline. Gave me the discipline. It made me, it familiarized me with the publishing industry, and it held me with my agent, and I did a lot of reading during that time. But I think it's mostly word craft, putting ideas together, all that kind of workmanship stuff is important, whatever you're writing, between.
Yeah.
But and some structural issues carry over depending on the kind of nonfiction you're writing. But I was mostly writing kind of how-to books, that
right.
sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's more like putting a puzzle together than it is like, I guess you could say that fiction writing is putting a puzzle together too.
Well,
it's a different kind of puzzle.
No, it's different in that you're like, you're trying to find out what the puzzle is. You don't even know.
Yeah.
You don't even really.
Yeah,
you're learning
exactly
what the puzzle is. It's
exactly.
And I write nonfiction, but it's narrative, and I'm always looking to figure out what to learn, what it is I'm actually going to say. So there is the same sense of discovery of like, I think I know I want to write about this thing, but I'm going to find out. It's so similar to fiction in that way, because I wrote fiction for years. And in terms of I want to discover something. That's how I know I've written about what I wanted. When I get that feeling of, I didn't know that. Oh, that makes sense. And it's
right.
the same thing in fiction in a way, right? Like a character talking to you independently.
Right. Yep.
So Glorious Boys in India in the World War II. You had India during the Cold War. You were writing about turn of the century. There's a lot of research. Are you a good A student? Is that all fun for you, or do you just have to grind through it?
No, I love it. I mean, that's a big part of, that's, again, why I write, is because I get to learn all of this stuff as I'm writing. I get to go through old books and diaries from people who lived, 100 years ago. And it's all great. It's a little frustrating because you do feel sometimes you get in the middle of a project like this and you think, I wish I'd already done all of this research, but I research as I go. Even though I think I wish I'd done it all, but I find that if I do a lot of research before I even begin, then I forget it all and I can't find it it's not there when I need it. So
right. okay.
It's better, especially with the internet now. It does make it easier having written a bunch of historically based books before the internet. It was much harder then.
Yeah.
It's just, you have a question about what's the name of the flower that grew
right.
in this particular valley, and you can look it up online and have it in 10 minutes, and it's, it doesn't derail your entire process.
That's right. Michael was talking about, Michael Elias, did my interview with him,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about, like, it's incredibly, like, if I want to know what this, library in Brooklyn looks like, I can just go on and there it is. I don't need to go to Brooklyn or go to Hawaii or go to wherever. I mean, it helps to go there, I think.
Well,
it's got to help to be there, but still,
it's
awfully handy.
I mean, that is the downside, because like I say, this Glorious Boy is set in the Andaman Islands, which is an archipelago chain of islands off the coast of Burma that was the western front of the Pacific Theater during World War II. It's as far it's as far west as the Japanese occupation got. And it's an absolutely incredibly fascinating history of that whole era. And the islands were then also inhabited by indigenous tribes that went back 60,000 years out of Africa.
Wow.
So it was this incredible collision of all of these different cultures, and it had been a penal colony for the British. The British had taken the Indian and Burmese freedom fighters and stuck them in a jail in these remote islands that are, 600 miles from the nearest mainland. So you had all of these different groups in this fascinating kind of collision. But when I was researching the book, I knew about the indigenous tribes. I knew about the penal colony. I had the story, the plot came to me the essential emotional plot came to me in a dream. So that was the
Oh, nice.
The, the story was based on a dream, but I didn't have the context and I didn't have the historical moment. And I'd heard about the Andamans and I was really intrigued, so I wanted to locate it there, but I didn't have the historical moment when the story would take place. So it wasn't until I actually got to the Andamans. I did have to go there. I had to feel the place, see the place,
yeah.
And I had, most important of all, I had to discover archival material that was only available there.
There were
books and
right.
pamphlets and leaflets that were only published right there by people who
right.
had lived there during the war. They, you know, these were firsthand accounts of what it had been like immediately before the war and during the war. And they had all the names of people who had, you know, been executed by the Japanese and just incredible
right.
stories of the occupation. And they also, my dream had circled around two children who were hiding during an evacuation, and they come out, and everybody, including the little boy's parents, have left. That was the dream that I had. That was the core, and that is the beginning of the book.
Right, yeah, great beginning.
But I didn't know when the evacuation was, and I didn't know that there had actually been an evacuation in the Andamans in 1942, just less than 2 weeks before the Japanese landed. So, and there were whites who were left behind from that evacuation ship, and they were imprisoned, and some of them were murdered by the Japanese.
Right.
So all of that became part of the story. That all became part of the novel. But it wasn't until I got to the Andamans, I didn't know any of that World War II stuff. And so
yeah.
there was an example of the internet wasn't doing it for me, because the internet was filled with tourist shots of the beaches and stuff like that, which was really not helpful, and a little bit of information about the indigenous tribes, but not anything.
You know, there's a moment early in the book where the I'm forgetting the characters' names, but the doctor leaving the
Shep.
Father of the Shep,
yeah,
and there he's getting ready to go, and he says and he smells the night jasmine. He goes, "Oh, I wish we could take that with us." And I thought, you know, maybe you could research and you know to stick that in there. But that's the kind of detail you usually only get by being there and smelling it and, you know, putting
yeah.
yourself in, really being sticky. Let me go back there in my mind and, oh, there's that smell. I just don't know how you can do that virtually.
You know, a lot of it came from having lived in India. Like I say, because my first memories were of
right.
India, I have all these very,
right.
very deep,
right.
dense memories of India that all they've come into play with both the books that I've written that are there. And the other thing is that you do have to talk to people who've been there. I have a friend who's much more of a globetrotter than I am, and she's been to rainforests all over the world. And so when she read the manuscript, she said, you know, you've got to get in the fact that the forest floor is like a mattress. It's everything has fallen down. It's like walking on a huge kind of bottomless sponge, and
right.
the smell of decay is everywhere because
right.
you know everything falls
yeah.
and it goes back millennia. You know, you would have to drill down through, you know, 2,000 years of compacted leaves before you got to the earth.
Wow.
And that's kind of so that people talk about how vivid the forest is and how it comes alive in the book, but it's because, you know, it's because I went there, because I smelled it myself, because I talked to people who have really spent more time than I have around rainforests. And I mean, that's kind of what it takes. It's you can't just research a book completely from other books, I don't think.
No, it's not enough. It's not, Amy, this is fascinating. You're a very interesting person. You've written some very interesting books, and I'm sure you've got more to come. And it's very possible our listeners are thinking the same thing. And they're thinking, she is so interesting. Maybe they've read your books, but maybe they haven't. And they're going to discover, what should they do? Where should they go to learn more about Amy Liu?
Well, my website is simply AimeeLiu.net. So that's the best place to look for info.
All right.
AimeeLiu.
It's all there. Hey,
it's
you ever,
there. Yep.
Would you, Would you, could you do a virtual a book group if people wanted you to Zoom in and talk to all their Chardonnay drinking? Yes, you'd do that?
I've got several of those lined up. I love to do them. Also, if anybody's, you know, they can contact me, but there's also a great organization called Novel Network that organizes book group visits from, you know, lots of authors. So any
nice.
Book groups that are looking for a lead on, you know, all different kinds of authors. I just want to put in a plug for them because they've been great.
All right, so you do that. Good for you.
Love
okay, check
groups.
It out, people. Check it out. But, okay, I'm not quite done with you yet, Amy. What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
How to think.
Ha! Oh, you didn't know how to do that before, but now you do!
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Think so. Well,
and
that's
also,
good.
And also, how to feel. I think maybe, and maybe if I could amend that, I think probably writing and reading both really have been hugely instrumental in, you know, helping me, you know, learn to experience and manage emotion. Yeah.
Yeah.
And empathize with others.
Yeah. Can't do it, Amy. Thank you so much. This was a pleasure. Congrats on Glorious Boy and whatever your next book is going to be.
Great. Thank you. And congratulations again to you, Bill. It's a big
day.
Oh,
you're very welcome. Thank you, Amy. Thanks a lot. Take it easy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, people. Learn how to think and feel. God, think and feel. You know? You know what? It's true. As writers, you know what we do? You know what we sell people? We sell them feelings. We sell them a felt experience of life. We are feeling merchants. That's what we are. All right. Well, y'all, be safe, whatever you're doing. Thank you to my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thanks, RJ. You're awesome. Whether you're sheltering in place or protesting or reading or whatever you're doing, stay safe and find something you love to do, find something you care about, and go do it. The world will be a better place.